right, so we're going to talk about Section B this morning. As Jennifer said, there are not a lot of changes in Section B, but this is a critically important section because it really sort of sets up your sense of who the resident is. And their ability to see and to hear and to communicate is fundamental to their life in the facility. So this is a really important section to get right, even if it's not a section that's changed a whole lot. So what are we going to try to do this morning? Talk about the intent of the section, identify the communication skills that need to be assessed, and then summarize coding requirements for some of the few modified items. If you'll notice, we moved some of these sensory items before the cognitive section because, it's really important to know about someone's ability to see and to hear and to communicate before you start assessing their cognitive abilities. So you're going to be looking at hearing, ability to understand and communicate with others, and visual limitations in this section. The first item in the section is very familiar to you at this time. It's B0100 comatose, and it's just basically to determine if the resident is comatose or in a persistent vegetative state. That item is unchanged from the past, and I think the main thing to note with this item is that it requires a diagnosis of being comatose or in a persistent vegetative state in the medical record by either the physician, nurse practitioner, or clinical nurse specialist as allowed by state law. So I think that's the most important thing to underscore about this unchanged item. The next item is B200 hearing, and this asks about the ability to hear with a hearing aid or appliance if normally used. And the choices that you have are adequate, no difficulty in normal conversation, social interactions, or listening to television, minimal difficulty, difficulty in some environments, that is like when a person speaks softly or the setting is noisy, moderate difficulty, the speaker has to increase their volume and speak distinctly for the individual to understand them, or highly impaired, the absence of useful hearing. So how do you go about assessing this item? Well, the first thing you want to do before doing this is to make sure that you understand whether or not the resident uses a hearing aid or other appliance before you start the assessment. Always attempt to talk to the resident to make a determination. Observe the resident in various situations, when they're sitting in social activities, when they're watching television, when they're interacting with family and friends, and consult with family, significant others, and staff. Look for indications of a hearing problem. What's your resident interview? Asking them if they have trouble hearing in certain situations. That item should be assessed with what they normally would use. So ask them if they have a hearing aid, if the hearing aid is with them in the facility, because oftentimes it's not. We had one patient whose family refused to leave their hearing aid in the nursing home because they were afraid it would get lost. So they would bring it the one day a week they visited, and that was the only time anyone could communicate with the patient. So find out if they have it in the facility. Check and make sure batteries are working and that it's operational for them. The hearing aid, indicate whether the resident used a hearing appliance during the 7-day hearing assessment. So this is a little bit different than the old item. It's not asking, do they have a hearing aid, do they own a hearing aid? It's really asking, was a hearing aid used when you scored the item above, when you scored B200? Was there a hearing aid involved in how you assessed their hearing? Code 0 if there was not, code 1 if yes. And it could be a hearing aid or other hearing assistive device that that resident normally uses. B600, let me just say one more thing about the hearing aid section. The reason this is important is because if they have limited hearing with their hearing appliance in place, then we should be asking ourselves, is the hearing appliance functioning properly? Does the hearing appliance need to be reassessed? If they don't have a hearing assistive device in place, then we should be asking ourselves, would they potentially benefit from that appliance? Speech clarity. Select the best description of their speech pattern. 0 is clear speech, distinct, intelligible words. 1 is unclear speech, slurred or mumbled words. And 2 is no speech, absence of spoken words. That has not significantly changed from the 2.0. B700 makes self understood, is the ability to express ideas and wants. And it's important to understand with this item that it considers both verbal and nonverbal communication. So zero is understood, one is usually understood. In other words, they have difficulty communicating some words or finishing some thoughts, but they're able if you prompt or give them time to communicate. Sometimes understood means that their ability is limited to making concrete requests, and three would be the code for rarely or never understood. The make self understood item, one of the changes in this version of the manual is that it explicitly allows sign language and recognizes that as a form of communication. It explicitly does that. Many of you have been counting that, others haven't. It also underscores that it's in the language of their choice. So it's not that they speak Spanish, you speak English, and therefore they can't make themselves understood. The question is, in their language of their choice, can they make themselves understood? The ability to understand others is understanding verbal content, however able, of course, with their hearing assistive device if used. Zero is understands, clear comprehension. One usually understands, misses some or part of the intent of a message, but they can comprehend most conversations. Two is sometimes understands, responds adequately to simple, direct communication only. And three is rarely, never understands. Again, if the person relies on signage to communicate, that should be taken into account. That is, if they can communicate with signage, then that is an ability to understand others. Likewise, it's in the language of their choice. The vision items B1000 and B1200. B1000 looks at the ability to see an adequate life. And if you look at this, it's primarily focusing on the ability to do reading or close-up types of visual tasks. Adequate is sees fine detail, including regular print in newspapers and books. One is impaired, sees large print, but not regular print in newspapers or books. Two is moderately impaired, limited vision, not able to see newspaper headlines, but can identify objects. And four is severely impaired, no vision, or sees only light, colors, shapes. Eyes do not appear to follow objects. And this, again, is not significantly changed from 2.0. And like in 2.0, the instruction is to try showing them a newspaper and looking at the regular print in the newspaper versus, say, the title lines in a newspaper and their ability to read those. If someone can't read, if they're illiterate, then you're looking, you can show them objects in order to determine their ability to or numbers. You can start with numbers if they can do that, or objects. Illiteracy is not uncommon, and it's something to think about when testing visual ability using the newspaper. You know, I had this patient that I kept, every time she came to my clinic, I'd write out her med list for her, and every time she came back, it was all, you know, her meds were a mess. She'd bring this bag of medications that didn't match anything I'd written down. And I finally, it took me a while, realized that she couldn't read these lists that I was very carefully making out for her. So it does happen, and it's something that we need to think about before we label someone as having limitation. The reason to look for this item is obviously we can do things to help people with low vision. Sometimes it's as simple as improving the lighting on their work area or workspace. Sometimes it's providing extra reading materials that are in a larger print. Sometimes it's books on tape. For B1000, how do you go about determining it? First, again, make sure if they use corrective devices that they have them in place. You can also consult with family or other folks that know them well and the staff about if they've noticed any difficulties with vision and ask the resident and then verify with the reading test, as I said. This item has changed slightly, the corrective lenses item. It's now anchored to what you based your assessment on in the item above. So if you were saying above that they had some impairment, did you say that with them using a corrective lens, or without using a corrective lens. And that's zero would be they didn't use a corrective lens or magnifying glass or other visual aids. And yes would be that they did. So that's pretty straightforward. Jennifer, I think we'll show the video. Now, what we have in the Vive video, and the Vive video is available here at the meeting. Tom brought, or actually, I think you can order them at the desk. Jennifer's made that announcement several times. You can also download it on the Picker Institute website or order it from the Pioneer Network has agreed to distribute it for us.
Great. Can I help you turn the chair around? Great. Right. Mrs. White? Mrs. White?
Yes?
Thank you for agreeing to come to your room to talk with me. As I said in the rec room a few minutes ago, my name is April, and I'm one of the nursing staff here at Eastern Home.
Who?
My name is April, and I'm a nurse here at Eastern Home.
Okay, April.
Is it all right if I take a few minutes to talk with you?
Yes.
Great.
Okay.
Should I sit here? Can you see me and hear me?
Oh, could you come a little closer?
Sure, of course.
There.
Now, I need to understand that you can hear me. Have you ever worn a hearing aid?
Oh, yes, years ago, but I could never work it.
Well, some people have some trouble hearing me. That's why I always bring this hearing amplifier. This is often helpful for people who can't understand me in this tone, so I don't have to shout. It's a headphone and microphone connected together. Let me show you how it works first. And if you like, you can try it and see if it might work.
Okay.
You put the headphones over your ears. And this connects to here, and this is the microphone that I'll be speaking into. Do you think you might like to try it?
Oh, sure.
Great. And you can adjust them so that they fit comfortably over your ears. And I'll turn this on. Is that better?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Great.
It's very good.
Terrific. Terrific. Oh. Excellent.
You want me to hold it?
If you would do that for me, that would be great. Great.
I hear you fine.
Wonderful. Now, have you ever worn glasses?
Oh, yes. I think they're in the drawer over there.
Okay. Can I get them for you to wear?
Yes, please.
Okay, great. Go. I'll help you with these.
Thank you.
There.
Thank you.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here with us. I understand you came to us from another facility. How's your stay been with us so far?
Well, everybody's been very nice. But you know what? It's cold in here.
Oh,
cold.
Can I get you something? To wear something warm? How about a cover? Oh, how about your lovely sweater?
Oh, yes, that would be very good.
Great. There we go. How's that?
That's nice. Much better.
Great. Ugh. Now, what I'd like to do today is ask you some questions about concentration, about your mood, and how you've been feeling over the past couple of weeks. I'd also like to ask you some questions about your routine here at the nursing home, and I'd like to ask you some questions about physical pain. Does that sound okay?
Oh, yes, very good.
Great. Great.
So, this, video I showed now, instead of an interviewing techniques, we'll talk a little bit about some of the techniques that April used during interview technique section. But it was to sort of underscore this idea that part of what we're doing when we go in to talk with our patients is making sure they can hear us, they can see us, and that we're sitting in a place that's comfortable to them. There was actually a neat little study in a family practice journal where one group of providers went in the room and stood around the bedside and sort of did their thing. And someone went back later and asked the patient how much time that provider had spent with them. And another group of providers went in to a patient's room and sat down in a chair and spent exactly the same amount of time in the room, but they went back later and asked how much time the provider had spent with them. And the patients almost always said that the provider who sat down spent more time with them, even though it was exactly the same amount of time. Now, you know, it wasn't the most rigorous study in the world, but it was actually, I think, very telling for how giving that patient that sense that you're taking the time and the space to be with them really can sort of make a difference in getting things set up. But the main point about this was that this is one source of information for assessing their hearing and then starting to get ready to assess their vision. So we're going to move on to Section C, Cognitive Patterns or the Brief Interview for Mental Status. We're going to talk about the intent of the section, why we're switching to a performance-based assessment to determine the resident's cognitive status, list the steps in doing the assessment, define what a category Q is, explain a little bit about conducting the BIMS, and code some BIMS interview questions correctly. We're also going to show a part of the video, an example scenario of the brief interview for mental status. The intent of Section C is pretty straightforward, is to determine the resident's attention, orientation, and ability to register and recall new information. And we'll talk a little bit more about those as we go through the specific items. Why is this important? You guys all know this. It's crucial in your care planning decisions that you're going to make as an interdisciplinary team with your residents. Misdiagnosis may result in inappropriate communication activities and failing to offer appropriate therapies for the individual. It's important to note that a cognitively intact resident may appear to be cognitively impaired because they're very frail. And so sometimes if we're just eyeballing people and trying to figure out their cognitive abilities, we tend to have, there's a systematic bias where older people get rated with poor cognitive ability, whether or not they have poorer, because they just look impaired to us. Hearing impairment, lack of interaction, the residents may appear more, and then there are some residents that we all know, some of our family members, who really do a great job of covering up their cognitive impairment. And so without sitting down and really doing a very structured assessment, it can be difficult to uncover that they're gaming. The hearing impairment is an interesting story. On the video, what we won't show you is one of the gold standards nurses' testimony that when she went into a facility and she was pointed towards the room of a severely cognitively impaired patient that had long stay patient who had been in the nursing home for over a year, she went in and they put the hearing assistive device on the resident. She sort of perked up, but then she went pretty flat. And they tried a couple of questions and then left the room. But on their way out the door, they put the headset back on to just test the volume and see where things were and realized that the batteries were dead. They went back out to the nurse's station, borrowed some batteries, put them in the hearing assistive device, and said, what the heck, you know, Deb said it will work. We don't think it'll work, but we'll go back in and try. So they put the headset on the patient. She sat up in the chair. She started talking to them. She pointed to items on the cue card, indicating that she was understanding the answers that she was giving and responding to them. She still had cognitive impairment. She wasn't, you know, totally cognitively intact. But this woman had been unable to communicate basically with her providers for a very long period of time, not because of her cognitive impairment, but because of her hearing problem. And this was, you know, when we did our data collection in 2007. This is not a story pre-RAI. So, you know, this is just one example, but it was, again, in a fairly limited sample that we unearthed this one patient. Performance-based assessment. It decreases the chance of incorrectly labeling someone's cognitive ability. The other thing that this helps you with is improving your detection of delirium. And when Ann talks to you about delirium, I'm sure she'll make this point. It's not whether or not they get the questions right on the structured cognitive assessment. It's observing their patterns of response when you're asking them these very concrete, specific questions that gives you some insights into whether or not they may have delirium. You're looking for change over time in that structured assessment. And that also may clue you in that there may be an underlying delirium or some other significant change that's taken place with that resident. Think about delirium or depression if you notice a worsening in their cognitive assessment. So the MDS assessment for cognition now is the brief interview for mental status. It lets you observe signs and symptoms. It can be completed and attempted for most residents. If you remember on the slides that I presented yesterday, 90% of residents were able to complete the brief interview for mental status. Some of them scored 0, some of them scored 15. So some scored the lowest possible and some scored the maximum, but 90% were able to participate. If they cannot be interviewed, then you will do the staff assessment as an alternative. And that's basically just the old 2.0 items that you guys are familiar with, and Ann will be covering those with you later. You do not have to conduct an interview and a staff assessment. If they complete the BIMS by the scoring rules, you're done. You don't have to go through the 7 pages of medical records to look at everything that's in there or not in there, as the case may be, go interview all the staff across all shifts and go interview. When they complete the brief interview for mental status, you're done. It's more accurate and reliable than observation alone. We've compared it. Others have compared it. It's just better to sit down and do these few limited items. It prevents mislabeling based on appearance and diagnosis. It helps to identify needed supports, and we'll talk about that when we get to some of the items and the delirium I've talked about. So the first item in this section, C100, is basically just asking, is that skip pattern that I talked about yesterday, should this interview be conducted? And it's just to sort of help you remember who it is that you conduct the interview with and to help you with skip patterns, because we know that those are harder to follow. Those of you, some of your vendors will sort of take care of this for you with your data collection instruments. But this item is C100. Should the brief interview for mental status be conducted? And you should be attempting to conduct the interview with all residents who are capable of making themselves understood at least some of the time. You would answer no, you're not going to conduct the interview if the resident is rarely or never understood, in which case it tells you to skip and answer C700 to C1000, the staff assessment for mental status. If they are able to make themselves understood at least some of the time, you go straight to C200, repetition of 3 words. Attempt the interview if the resident can be understood at least some of the time. Make every effort to provide an interpreter if needed for this section. So you should never do a cognitive, if someone's preferred language is Korean, you should never do a cognitive assessment in English if their preferred language is something other than English. So you do need to try to find an interpreter to do this assessment. If, you know, we realize, let's see if there's anything else here. So this just refers you back to the item that you're looking at to think about the language issue, C1100, and it's whether or not the resident needs or wants an interpreter to communicate with a doctor or healthcare staff. That language is basically the language that NCQA has recommended for determining language needs for all patients. And no is they don't need an interpreter, yes is they do, and you write the language below, or you're unable to determine. So then basically you're going to code whether or not the cognitive interview should be attempted with the resident. So on to the items. So basically the brief interview for mental status. This is not a comprehensive cognitive assessment. We didn't have room for it. The form's long enough. We didn't put everything that you could possibly assess for cognition. Some facilities are already doing the MMSE. If you're doing that, great. You still need to fill in these items on the MDS. It doesn't replace, it doesn't cover all the domains that MMSC is going to cover. It's highly correlated with MMSC, but it doesn't replace it. But most facilities aren't doing the MMSC, and so these items will help. C200 is repetition of three words. C300 is temporal orientation, and C400 is recall. And then at the end, they're compiled into a summary score, which again is very highly correlated with some of the longer cognitive assessments that are out there, including the MMSC. So to conduct the interview, as you saw April do, you're going to establish a comfortable environment, make sure the resident can hear you, address their concerns. And then you're going to, for the brief interview for mental status, this is the one interview that it's very important you complete it in one sitting with the resident. Don't interrupt it. Don't get up and go away and come back. This is the one interview that needs to be completed. It's very short and quick, so you won't have, you know, the need to interrupt it should be pretty minimal. Ask each item in the order that they appear on the MDS item set. If a resident refuses to answer an item, okay, accept it and move on. Stop the interview if you need to. Now there is an opportunity to stop the interview because they're giving you too many responses, and it's going to be considered non-responsive answers, and it's going to be considered an incomplete interview. I think we'll get to that actually later, so I'm not going to dwell on it right now. I'll do it when we get to that set of slides. Assess for cognitive patterns. No, wait, we don't get to it later. Hold on a second. Yes, we do. Okay. So I'm going to skip that one too. Sorry. Repetition of three words. So here we're finally to the first item in the VIMS. Repetition of three words. So you're going to ask the resident to repeat three words. And you're going to basically say, I'm going to say three words for you to remember. Please repeat the words after I have said all three. The words are sock, blue, and bed. Now tell me the three words. And you will then, in this, again, what you're looking for with this item, and the reason this is a fundamental item that's in a lot of cognitive assessments, is that it could tell you, one, if they can't tell it back to you, that they have a hearing impairment. The other is possibly a language barrier. Another is inattention. So they're, you know, like my teenager, they're looking off in space while you're talking to them. But that could be a sign of delirium that you're sort of looking for and watching for attention. And it could also be a sign of organic cognitive impairment. Ask the question as written and immediately prompt for a response. If the resident repeats all three words correctly on the first attempt, then you will be reinforcing. Everybody gets the reinforcement with the category cues. This is because later on you're going to be asking them to recall the item, and you may be giving them the category cues to help them with their recall. It also helps them encode that information a little bit better that you're giving them the category cues. And you'll code their response before moving on to the next interview question. So what's a category cue? It's basically a phrase that prompts another word for this. It's a phrase that puts a word in context. It helps prompt your recallability, stimulates learning, and fosters memory even among residents that are able to repeat the word immediately. So the cues for this item are: a sock is something to wear, blue is a color, and bed a piece of furniture. You can provide these category cues to them verbally, or if their preferred method of communication is writing, you can provide them in writing. That's the one time, you know, you can do it in writing, not for your convenience, not because you have an inability to speak clearly, but because they prefer to communicate in writing, then you can give these category cues in writing. And that's in the manual. So you'll say to them, if they get them right, you'll say, yes, that's correct. The three items were sock, a piece of clothing, blue, a color, bed, a piece of furniture. Okay? And you will write down in that little coding box a three. If they recall two or fewer words on the first attempt, you're going to make a second attempt. And the second time that you try to get them, you know, to encode those words, you're going to give them the category cues. But what you're going to write in that box on C200 is how many items they got right the first time you asked. You're not writing down the number of times you had to repeat. You're not writing down how many they got right the second time or the third time, because you're looking for that first effort to repeat back the item to you. But you're going to keep trying to give them this information so they can encode it so that they have an opportunity later on to recall. If they don't recall on the second attempt, you're going to make a third attempt, and you're going to repeat the words again and use the cues. If they don't get all three words after three tries, make sure that they can hear you, that that's not the problem. But if they can hear you, then you're going to move on to the next question. Obviously, if they can't hear, you need to figure out if there's any way to optimize their hearing before proceeding. The way that you score this is it doesn't matter what order they recall the words. If they recall blue before sock or sock before bed, it doesn't matter as long as they give you the three words. And the words can be recalled in any context. So they can make up a little mnemonic right on the spot, like I sometimes do to remember things, the sentence that contains the three words that they feed back to you. That's okay. As long as the three words are in there, they've given you back the words. Score the number of words repeated on the first attempt, as I said, on the item. If the interviewer cannot say the words clearly, then you need to just have another staff member conduct the interview with the resident. So in some providers have very thick accents, and it can be difficult sometimes for them to say those three words clearly. The best course for the facility is to have a provider who can speak clearly and without an accent conduct the interview with the resident for this specific performance-based assessment. The limited circumstances where the BIMS can be conducted in writing I've already talked about, and that is if the resident's preferred form of communication is in writing. And there's some language about these two things in Chapter 3 of the manual. Coding instructions. Again, you're going to record the maximum number of words that were repeated on the first attempt, whether they got zero, none of the words, one of the words, two of the words, three of the words. And gee, the numbers match, so that's good. All right, the interviewer says the words are, so here's an example. The interviewer say the words are sock, blue, and bed. Now please tell me the three words. The resident says bed, sock, and blue. And the interviewer will then say, that's right. The words are sock, something to wear, blue, a color, and bed, a piece of furniture. So basically that interviewer recode this item as three, because the resident repeated all three items on the first attempt. Now, one of the things that we do in the manual is give you just some suggested language to sort of introduce the section, which I forgot to talk about at the beginning. And that is to just say, and you'll see it in the scenarios, I'm going to ask you some questions. We ask these of everyone, some of these to help us plan their care better. Some of these questions may seem easy, some may seem hard. Is it okay if we start? And, you know, most residents, again, want to tell you and to help you help them, and they want to answer your questions. If you get someone that says, no, go away, I don't want to talk to you, that's important to know that this person is not wanting to communicate and talk to their providers, but you're not going to force the situation. You can ask, you know, would it be okay if I come back at another time or if someone else comes back? But if they say no, they don't want to, then you don't force the situation. Scenario two, the interviewer says the words are sock, glue, and bed. Now please tell me the three words. And the resident goes, what were those three words? The interviewer goes ahead and repeats the three words and the category cue, but they're going to code this item as zero, none, because on the first attempt, the resident was unable to repeat any of the words. So practice items. The interviewer says the words are sock, blue, and bed. Now please tell me the three words. And the resident says back sock, bed, and black. The interviewer repeats the three words plus the category cues. Let me say the three words again. They are sock, something to wear, blue, a color, and bed, a piece of furniture. Now tell me the three words. And the resident says, oh yeah, that's right, sock, blue, and bed. So how should this be coded? So most people said two, and the correct code is two, because the resident repeated two of the three words on the first attempt. Again, it's scored based on the first attempt only. So second practice item, the words are sock, blue, and bed. Now please tell me the three words, and the resident says, the blue socks belong on the dresser. The interviewer repeats the three words plus the category cues. How should this one be coded? Two. Hearing and seeing a lot of twos. All right, which is correct. The correct answer is two. The resident repeated two of the three words, blue and sock. They put them in a sentence, but that's okay that they were able to use a mnemonic. Now, you might want to make a note of that, you know, that your resident uses mnemonics to help remember things. I mean, to yourself, CMS doesn't need to know that, but you can make a note of that for your care planning team or whoever's completing the brief interview for mental status, because that's an important thing to sort of know about this person's cognitive patterns and how they learn. The words are sock, blue, and bed. Now please tell me three words. The interviewer repeats the resident says, I'm sorry, shoe, bed, red. The interviewer repeats the three words plus the category cues, and the resident says, oh, I thought you said red, bed, and shoe. One. Exactly correct. The correct code is one, because the resident repeated one of the three words on the first attempt. The words are sock, blue, and bed. Now please tell me the three words. My husband always left his socks under the bed. The interviewer repeats the three words plus the category cues. How should this be coded? A lot of twos in here, you're right. The correct code is two. The resident repeated two of the three words, bed and sock. The resident put them in a sentence, but that's okay. And it led to them repeating two words. So on to C300, temporal orientation. You're going to ask the three questions in this section one at a time. Again, this is temporal orientation is common to a lot of cognitive items that are, a lot of cognitive assessments that are out there, the MMSE, the 3MS, a lot of the different longer assessments use temporal orientation. We modified this a bit because we know residents in nursing homes or in any institutions, hospitals, may not be exactly oriented to time. So we give partial credit for being close, because something about the institutional setting may set you off a bit. After you ask each item, you're going to give them up to 30 seconds to sort of think about it and respond. You do not give them clues, even if they try to get them out of you. And if they do, you just tell them you need to know if they can answer without any help from you. So the first item, C300A, is the year. And you're assessing their ability to report the correct year. Please tell me what year it is now. You're going to record, So if they miss it by more than 5 years or don't give you an answer, then you record it as a zero. If they miss by 2 to 5 years, then you'll record it as a one. If it's missed by 1 year, as a two. And if they got it correct, they get a three. So they get, again, partial credit for being close. And the closer, the better. So let's say, for example, the date of the interview is May 5, 2010, and the resident states it's 2010 or 2010, then you code that as three, correct. Moving on to month. Assessing the ability to, this item just assessed their ability to report the month. They get partial credit for being close. If they miss it by more than a month, then they get no answer. If they miss it by 6 days to 1 month, they get a one. And if they're within 5 days of the month, then they get a two. We'll show you some examples. The date of the interview is June 25th, 2010, and the resident says it's June. So obviously they're accurate within 5 days of the month, and they would be coded as a two. And we'll get to some examples of the other more complicated ways of coding in just a minute. Assessing the resident's ability to report the correct day of the week in C300C, what day of the week is it today? And here they just either got it right or they didn't. Zero is incorrect and one is correct. So here's a coding example. It's Monday, June 25th, 2010. The resident says it's Monday. They got it right. They got a one. So here's some practice activities that will clarify some of these partial scoring approaches. We know it makes it a little more complicated to do than just completely right or completely wrong, but it gives you a more nuanced and fairer picture of where that resident's cognitive status is. So it's worth learning the slightly more complicated scoring rules. The date of the interview is June 16, 2010, and the resident responds to your statement when you say, please tell me what year it is right now. They say it's 2007. So the question is, do you code it 0, 1, 2, or 3? And I heard a lot of 1s, which is right. So the correct code is 1. They missed it by 2 to 5 years, 2007. If you had a hard night last night, I'll tell you, it's within 2 to 5 years of 2010. For the date of the interview, now is again January 10, 2010. The resident, when you're asked to tell you what year it is right now, they say it's 1910. So 0, 1, or 2, 2 or 3, and obviously the correct code is 0. They missed it by more than 5 years, or no answer. Even though 10 is part of the year, really it's 1910 and they got it wrong. So the date of the interview is April 1, 2010. The resident responds to the statement, please tell me what year it is right now, and they say 10. And the interviewer asks, can you tell me the full year? The resident says 10. The interviewer can state one more time, can you please tell me the full year, for example, 1982, and the resident says it's 2010. Now, here, what do you think you would code that? D, 3, correct. So basically, even though 10 was partially correct, you can't give them credit for it, obviously, because they could think it's 1910 or 1810. So you need to give them an opportunity to tell you back that it's 2010, and they did. The date is June 28, 2010, and you ask them what month are we in right now, and they say it is July. So is that a 0, a 1, or a 2 coding? I'm hearing some different answers. I'm hearing 1s and 2s. The correct answer is 2. It's accurate within 5 days. So now here's a clue. If you're not sure, write it down and go back and check the calendar when you're through your interview. Basically, you know, 30 days have September, April, June, and November, right? So June 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, right? So July is within 5 days of the evaluation, okay? Everybody okay? The date of the interview is June 30, 2010. The resident responded to the question, what month are we in right now, says that it's August. So do we code it a 0, a 1, or a 2? I'm hearing some slightly different answers on this one. It's 0 because they missed it by more than 1 month, or they didn't answer. June 2, 2010 is the correct date. And when you ask what month we're in right now, the resident says May. So did they miss it by more than 1 month, by 6 days to a month, or were they accurate within 5 days? Yes, 2. A lot of people said 2. Accurate within 5 days. So June 2 minus 5 days is May 29th. You know, so May has 31 days, but when you count back 5 days, you count June 2 as the first, and you count back 5 days, that gets you to May the 29th. The resident is staying the month within 5 days. Okay. The date of the interview is Monday, June 25, 2010, and the resident responds by saying, when you ask what day of the week it is, they say Tuesday. 0. Incorrect, I'm sorry, the correct answer is 0, incorrect or no answer. They incorrectly stated the day of the week. The day of the interview is Monday, June 25, 2010, and when you ask what day of the week it is, they say, well, today's a good day. So the code is 0, incorrect, or no answer. So let's move on to 400, recall. So you're going to ask the resident to repeat the words from the earlier question, and the language you're going to use is right there on the form. Let's go back to an earlier question. What were those three words that I asked you to repeat? And you're going to give them up to 5 seconds to recall the items. If they recall the word, great. You're going to score that as 2, yes, no Q required. But if they don't, you're going to give them that category Q that we gave, that we initially taught them up above. We're going to give it to them now and say, you know, one word was a color, and give them a chance to say, oh yeah, blue. And then if they get it with that, then they get a 1. If they can't recall it even with the cue or the prompt, then you give it, code it as a 0. You give them a chance to answer first before you give them the cues to answer. Each word is coded separately. 400A is for sock, 400B is for blue, and 400C is for bed. It's considered a recall without cueing if they recall the items. They can recall them in any order, and they can recall them as part, again, of a sentence or a mnemonic. It's just as long as they recall the words without a cue. The interviewer recall with cueing, you gave them a cue. And again, they can recall them in any order or in a sentence. If they could not recall the word even after you cued them, then this the item is coded as a 0. Or if they refuse to answer. If they do recall it after you've given them the category cue or prompt, then you code it a 1. If they were able to do it without cueing, just right off the bat, then you code that as a 2. So here's an example. The resident says socks, shoes, and bed. And the interviewer says one word was a color. And the resident goes, oh, the shoes were blue. So here's how you would code this one. They got socks without the cue, so they got a 2 for sock. They got blue after they got a category cue, so they get a 1 for that item. And they got bed without a cue. They got it right initially, so they get a 2 for that. All right, so some practice items. You ask them to recall the 3 words, and they say, you know, I'm so tired. I just don't want to do this anymore. So how are you going to code the items in 400? 0, could not recall. Choosing not to answer a question often in this population indicates an inability to answer. They don't want to say, I don't know. They'll say, I don't feel like it, I'm tired, you're asking too many questions. And for cognitive testing, we take that as an indication that they all likelihood don't know the answer to the question. The most accurate way to score cognitive function, even though we know sometimes it can just be that the resident really was tired or cranky, this interview takes about 2, maybe 3 minutes to complete. So they're not going to be too tired. And so again, the standard way of coding cognitive assessments for refusals is to code it as incorrect. The resident is asked to recall the 3 words, and they say, I don't remember. And you say, one word was something to wear, and they say, clothes. The interviewer says, okay, one word was a color, and they say blue. And then they say, okay, the last word was a piece of furniture, and the resident says couch. Now this one, I laughed yesterday about the SAT. This looks like SAT answers. Okay, so A, all terms are coded 0. No, could not recall because the resident initially stated she couldn't remember. B, option is all terms are coded 1. Yes, after cueing because the resident required cueing to attempt recall for all of the items. C, all terms are coded 1, yes, after cueing, because the resident remembered at least one term after cueing. Or D, code sock and bed is 0, no, could not recall, and code blue is 1, yes, after cueing. D. Okay. All right, so you would code A and C as no, because they were not able to recall, but you would code B, correct, blue, because they did recall it after they got the cue. Practice, all right. So we're going to watch the video of the brief interview for mental status. Now, one of the things that I thought was in here, but is the idea of nonsensical answers. So I'm just going to review nonsensical answers really quickly. So what nonsensical means is not that they got it wrong. What nonsensical means is that the answer has absolutely nothing to do with the question that you've asked. It's totally off track. So I have a patient in a nursing home who is the sweetest guy, but every time you ask him a question, he looks at you and says, "Where's Sylvia?" So when I ask him an item like, "What year is it?" and he tells me, "Where's Sylvia?" That's a nonsensical answer. It's not at all related to this. If he had told me it was 1820, that's clearly wrong, but it's related to the question of year. Now, in the BIMS, a nonsensical answer is still coded as wrong, okay? It's coded as a zero, because they didn't get it right, obviously. But it will be part of the stop rules for you to remember how many nonsensical answers you got. Because if they give you too many nonsensical answers, we're going to tell you that that's not considered a completed interview, and you need to go to another form of assessment, to the staff assessment. Because there is the possibility that they could have some kind of expressive aphasia and still be cognitively intact, and so you don't want to be miscoding. So if someone had an inability to answer the questions because they're giving you, you know, totally unrelated items, then you're going to need to go ahead and do your staff assessment. Likewise, if someone is not able to communicate, you can't assume that they're cognitively impaired just because they can't communicate. And so your staff assessment needs to be done with the assumption that they may have intact or at least partially intact cognitive ability when you enter into doing that staff assessment. All right, Jennifer, can we start? So the date of the interview is November 23, 2009, on this, and just try to keep track as she's asking her the questions.
The purpose of the first interview section in MDS 3.0 is to assess the resident's cognitive patterns. The brief interview for mental status efficiently provides insight into the resident's current condition and helps to identify needed supports. Most residents are able to attempt this brief interview for mental status. Without an attempted structured cognitive interview, a resident may be mislabeled based on his or her appearance or assumed diagnosis. Now we will demonstrate an interview. Score the interview as you watch. To do this, you need to know that it is Monday, November the 23rd, 2009. Before watching and scoring the interview, review the coding instructions in the manual.
Mrs. Jones. Mrs. Jones.
Mrs. Jones, I'd like to ask you those questions now. We ask these questions of everyone, and we do it so we can better plan your care.
Some of the questions may seem easy, others more difficult. Are you ready?
Okay.
I'm going to say three words for you to remember. Please repeat the words after I have said all three. The words are sock, blue, and bed. Now tell me the three words.
Bed. Blue. Blue is my favorite color.
Okay. Yes, two of the words are bed, a piece of furniture, and blue, a color. The third, sock, is something that you wear. Now tell me the three words.
The blue socks are on the bed.
Okay. Now can you tell me what year it is right now?
Don't you know?
We ask these questions so that we can better plan your care. Please tell me the year we're in.
1999, the millennium.
And what month is it?
November. My grandchildren made that turkey for me.
Oh, very creative. And what day of the week is it?
Monday. Monday, we play bingo. It's Monday.
You play bingo on Monday?
Monday.
Wonderful. Now let's get back to the earlier question. What were those three words I asked you to repeat?
Blue.
Okay. And something that you wear?
Dress.
Okay, and a piece of furniture?
Bed.
Okay, Now I'd like to ask you some questions about your mood. Would that be all right with you?
Okay. So Kathy actually is one of the nurses and the MDS coordinator in one of the facilities that I work in. So let's go through how that was scored. C200, two. She remembered two of the words initially, bed and blue. Two of the words initially, bed and blue. C300A, zero. 1999 is more than 5 years away from 2010. What month are we in right now? Two. She was accurate within 5 days. Now, I think that was an important point. She used the turkey. That's okay. That's one of the reasons that, you know, we say, well, maybe people are going to know. Some people say, well, nursing home residents, how are they going to know what month it is? Well, there's always something going on in the facility. It's Valentine's Day. It's Thanksgiving. It's Christmas or other holidays going on where there are decorations and parties and things going on. So there's actually more opportunity for orientation than, or, you know, it's their birthday month or whatever. So using an environmental cue is okay. Now, it's not okay for them to get up, walk across the room, get the calendar out of their desk drawer, and start looking at it. But, you know, if they're using environmental prompts and cues, that's okay to score it. So she got a two for that one. What day of the week is it today? One. She was correct. She used a cue, the fact that it was bingo day, to do that. How about 400A, recall of sock? Zero, no. How about B, able to recall blue? Two. She got that right just without any kind of prompting. And how about able to recall bed? C. One. So C is coded a one. She needed the cue, but she did give it back to you after a cue. So, did I go backwards? What did I do here? So next is the summary score. So we'll sum her score in just a second, and I just want to talk about why that's important. It allows you to compare future and past performance. So you can just look at that score and see if it's changing over time. It decreases the chance of incorrectly labeling cognition, improves the detection of delirium because you're looking for that change, provides a more reliable estimate, and allows the staff to interact based on the resident's ability. So back, one of the things I didn't bring up was the recall item. You're coding here that she needed a prompt. And that's really important for you for care planning. So this item's not just an MDS item to make CMS happy. It actually can help you with your care planning. Here's a patient that you know is helped by prompts. So make a note of that while your whoever is doing the interview is interviewing them, and bring that back to the care planning team, that this is a particularly important tool to help this resident in being oriented or in remembering things. So, okay, you're going to conduct the assessment, and then you just add up the values for the BIMS assessment. You want to fill in both of those two boxes. There are two boxes there. So if they got zero, you'd write 00. If they got a 9, you'd write 09. If they got a 15, you write 1 and 5. Don't add up the score while you're with the resident. Wait till you've left the room and focus your full attention on the interview. Then you can just honestly say, if they ask how you did fine, I'll add it up later, you know, and just move on. Apply the guidelines to determine if the interview is complete or incomplete, and we'll go over those in a second. So now the total score reflects cognitive status, but it's not diagnostic of cognitive status. You're not being asked to make a diagnosis. The total score is highly correlated with MMSE, but again, there are other reasons somebody might be getting these wrong, and it's really up to the primary care provider or the neurologist or the neuropsychological staff to be sort of coming up with whether or not it meets criteria for dementia or other cognitive impairment. But the correlation is such that 13 to 15 correlates highly with someone who's cognitively intact. A total score of 8 to 12 is moderate impairment, and 0 to 7 is severe impairment. Again, we talked about the two-digit. Be sure you use a leading 0 if it's less than 10. If they were unable to complete the interview, then you code 99, and it says that right there on the form so that you don't have to remember that. A zero does not mean the interview was incomplete. It just means they got them wrong. And this one just shows you basically the whole point of this example is just that you add 2 plus 2 plus 1 plus 2 plus 1 and you come up with 8. So if we add her interview items, we get the first item was 2, the next was 2, 1, 2, and 1. So we've got 4, 5, plus 3, 8. Everybody with me on that? So you just write down a 0 and an 8 in 500 for that interview that you just observed. All right, so this gets back to what I was talking about logical and illogical. So basically, for us to say that this item, this section was completed, they need to have answered at least 4 of the items from C200 through C400. They don't have to have gotten them right, but they need to have not refused and not given you illogical answers for at least 4 of the items. They can get them wrong, but if they refused, or they gave you completely, you know, where's Sylvia for all of them, for 4 of the items, then you will consider that an incomplete interview. To be relevant, a response only has to be related to the question or logical. The responses do not have to be correct to be counted as an answer. A score of 0 does not mean that it's incomplete. What constitutes an incomplete interview? They can communicate, but they choose not to participate. Belmont principles, you have the right to refuse anything we try to do to you. Minority of residents are unable or unwilling to participate in the brief interview. When we presented it to folks scheduled for their MDS assessments, 90% completed this. If the resident gives nonsensical responses to 4 or more items in C200 through C400, or it can, again, that same idea, incorrect is not illogical or nonsensical, okay? So conduct C200 and 300 with all residents who attempt the interview. If by the time you get through with C300, they haven't answered any items, or they've given you nonsensical responses to all of the items up to the end of C300, well, they've now failed the 4 rule, and you don't have to continue on with the assessment. And that's basically what this next bullet says. So they need to have provided relevant responses to at least 4 items in C200 to 400 for you to be able to enter a score instead of a 99 in box 500, in section 500. If you stopped it after 300 because they've either refused to answer everything through the end of C300 or they've given you nonsensical answers through the end of C300, then you're going to have coded the ones you tried as a 0, and then you'll code the items in 400 with a dash, and then under the summary score for 500, you'll enter a 99 because you didn't complete it. And dash means you didn't try it. Same convention for the dash as you have in other parts of the form. And if you code it as a 99, that means you do go on and do the staff assessment for mental status. If you get through to the end of the interview, you get through the end of C400, it could still be incomplete because give you relevant answers to 4 or more items in that section. And again, you would code 99 and 500 and indicate that it was an incomplete interview. So the item in 600, again, is just to help you with the prompting in here. And it's basically ask you, should the staff assessment be conducted, C600? And the answer for that one would be, basically, if you entered something other than 99 in that C500 box, then you would enter 0. No, the resident was unable to complete the interview, and you would move on to doing the delirium items. If they were unable to complete the interview, if you either entered a 0 in C100 or you entered a 99 in C500, so there are 2 ways they could have not completed the interview. One is you never attempt it because they were unable to make themselves understood even some of the time, or you tried the interview and it was incomplete, then you would put a 1 in box C600. And actually, I told you something wrong. I apologize. Let me back up. So the only time that you'd be entering a 1, because of the skip pattern that you had in C100, It skips you straight through to C700. So you would never end up, if you had said at the beginning that they were rarely or never understood, you would have skipped 600. You would not be in 600. Sorry, we changed that after the national study. Basically, if you entered a zero in C100, you would just be going straight to C700, okay? So you would be entering a one in this box that, yes, the resident was unable to complete the interview if you had entered a 99 in box 500. Now, again, some of your vendors may take care of this for you in your software programs, but this is just to help those people that are doing it paper and pencil and then entering it into their software. And let's see, again, you know, you still need to assess people for this. It's really important. Even though they made, they couldn't complete the interview, it's important to do staff assessment because there are reasons other than severe cognitive impairment that they might not have been able to complete the interview. And you're going to be observing their behaviors. And you're going to, this is just what we talked about, you're going to look at the answer to C500 to see whether or not it was completed. And then we talked about this already. You'll code zero. If you did finish the interview, a zero goes in that box for C600. And if you entered a 99 in that box, then a one goes in that item. So basically, that's the brief interview for mental status. If you'll notice, this is the one section that we don't use cue cards. Because we unless, again, the only way that resident communicates normally is in writing, then we will write things out. But otherwise,